Good afternoon. So last time we started talking about overflows on the heap, and we had kind of our easy case where we had two heap objects adjacent to each other. And we mentioned kind of this general strategy of, well, you know, even though we might kind of, as programmers, think of malloc and free as unpredictable, they're usually not like generating random numbers all the time. So they will actually be consistent. So we can actually have consistent overflows. And often what people do is they just, you know, trigger a bunch of overflows and see where are things actually in memory. Like, what does this actually overflow? And is there a way of taking advantage of that? We saw that with the sudo exploit example, where they just, you know, tried crashing the program a bunch of times and looked where the overflow is interesting. And then we also mentioned, well, we talked about overflowing into like other things that were malloced. There's sometimes, depending on our malloc, a generic type of overflow we can do, where we overflow by overwriting the bookkeeping information that malloc keeps. And this is not super consistent because, well, there's different implementations of malloc out there, but a very common strategy is that we keep metadata about our objects next to the objects, and a very common strategy is to have something like a linked list there because, well, if you think of what malloc and free do, we kind of need to add and remove things from this list all the time, and of the data structures you've learned, linked lists are a pretty good choice for that. And the linked list manipulation ends up being using a pointer to write a value in memory, using a value determined from another pointer. And we can overwrite both of those at the same time. That's what we looked at last time. So before I move on to that, questions about... So I showed this example last time where we, you know, where when free tries to free something, you know, and we've overwritten the next thing, a common operation will be, well, now we're going to combine the next object with our current one, so we're going to remove it from the linked list. And that means that we need to follow our prev pointer and our next pointer here as we remove things in order to update the next and previous item in the linked list. And we can convince, you know, our free implementation that, oh, well, prev of next, which is something you need to update, points to, in this case, a global offset table entry for free. And we can set that to point to whatever we want by changing the next pointer, which is what we're naturally going to update. So questions on this kind of, this is another example of our pointer subterfuge pattern that we've seen a bunch of times that comes up a lot, where we basically find a way of doing a memory read or write by manipulating a pointer and letting the program take its normal course and use that pointer. So questions about this? So when I was talking about this, I neglected to cover a kind of very important caveat about this particular situation. Something that's going to restrict what we can put here. So can someone tell me what's a limitation about what we can put in this next pointer? You know, which is here. This is a practical issue that is sometimes going to make our idea for this attack not work. So to think about this, let's think about what is our code for removing an object from a linked list. We have one of these lines of code is the current of next And what we're doing here is current of net of previous of next, sorry, of previous of next equals the current of next. Can someone tell me some other things we do when we remove C from a linked list? We have our C. It points to our C next. And we have our C prev. And that also has, and in this case, we're setting cprev initially points here, cprev next, and we're changing that to point here. What else are we going to do here? Yeah. So we're also going to want to, so also we have that cnext has a previous pointer. Also cprev has a previous pointer, but that really doesn't, you know, matter in this example. So we're going to do cnext previous equals c previous. And that we can kind of represent by we're making this link. And that fully sort of removes the current element c from our linked list. Some questions about manipulation. Hopefully this is DSA 1 review. So if we think apply this to this situation here, that means after this line down here of prev next c prev next equals c next, we're going to do c next prev equals c prev, or something like that. Not possibly this would be in the other order. And in our diagram, that's somewhere in the middle of this shell code. So if we actually have executable memory, this is something we can deal with by writing our shell code very carefully to probably jump over this place that will be overwritten. If we don't have executable if we don't have executable and writable memory, this is more of a challenge. And maybe we won't have a great solution for that case. Maybe in that case, we want to manipulate a pointer that's like a vtable pointer, where we aren't trying to set, where we have a list of function pointers here. You know, so what we might do instead of this attack is we might, instead of pointing to the global offset table, will point to a sort of V table, will point to an object with a V table pointer and make that V table pointer point to our shell code. Point, have that V table pointer be our shell code, etc. And that's a list of function pointers. Doesn't matter if those are executable. But this will restrict the kinds of attacks we can actually do because we have to do a write near where we're pointing to. Is that so? Questions about that idea? So in this example, we're just, I'm kind of assuming we can write shellcode. We have executable memories for some reason, you know, which definitely makes it simpler. But if we don't, we can't actually probably adjust the free pointer directly. We probably need to adjust something that's accessed less directly, just because we won't have writable and executable memory. Because as you learned with Professor Campbell, that's something we can avoid doing nowadays, and we therefore don't do. So questions? Yes. Okay. So when we finished up last time, we had exercise, and we had concluded that, so we have this example here where, you know, probably the easiest attack here, I guess there's two kind of attacks we could run here when with this scenario. So one is we could hope that our overflow will go into another object with a VTable pointer, and that might be arguably the easier case. And that would be the argument for, well, that would be the easiest way to exploit this heap buffer overflow. The other option would be that if it goes into a free object, or we arrange that to happen, we could use our next and previous table pointer to do this manipulation. So let's say our buffer A here is at address 1000, and we want to cause this to overwrite address 2000 with the pointer 3000. So let's think of what should we put in our attacker control, the thing that overwrites the buffer. I'll give you a minute or two, okay? And the question, big question is like, where do we put 2000 and 3000, and do we have to adjust them to account for the actual location that's overwritten? Because remember here, right, our pointer pointed to this printf entry even though we were overwriting the free entry. So what does that adjustment look like in this scenario? I'm going to say our buffer starts with 64 bytes of we don't care. Question is, what's after that?
I agree with you.
And I guess I will make a change for sake of making this more possible. Since if you're paying close attention, you'll realize that there's a problem with my example, that we have no characters in there. And we can't write those pointer values with string copy. So assume it's a memcopy of some size. I should have been more careful in choosing my pointers. So who'd like some more time? So where I would look at this is that we're starting writing here, and I'm gonna assume we actually have a real not string copy, because string copy is actually a problem because I can't encode the pointer values, some of these pointer values, without null characters. And string copy stops at the first null character. So assume we have something which doesn't do that, or I fix the pointer values so they don't have that problem. So in that case, we're gonna overwrite our buffer, so we need 64 bytes for that. We want to overwrite this unused space, so 16 bytes for that. And then we're gonna get to a free object. And this free object is gonna be removed from the linked list to merge it with the newly deleted freed one. Because what we're gonna do is we're gonna start with a space where we have A followed by some free space, And then we want some free space that starts where A started, that, you know, eliminates the free space later, because it's merged into this bigger region of free space. And so then that's going to have 8 bytes for size and free. So we're going to have sort of fake size data. Probably doesn't really matter what that is, but we, you know, that's 8 bytes. And then I want to have a next pointer, which is going to be what's written by this line here. So I want to have my 0x3000 as a pointer, as the bytes of a pointer. So it's actually going to be 00000000000, so on, to encode the pointer as bytes, like it would be when it's stored in memory. Then I want to have my next pointer, my pref pointer, and that pref pointer is going to pretend it's pointing to here in some other one of these free data structs, free region information. So I want to have 0x2000 minus, well, I'm writing to the next field, minus 8. Because when we add back 8 to find the next field to overwrite, we want to, that's what we want to be sent. So that's what I get for my overwrite. And something that will happen as a consequence here is that we will write to next, which we've determined we set to 0x3000 prev. So this is going to be this sort of the other half of manipulating the linked list is going to set memory at 0x3010 hex, so 16 bytes later, because that's where the prev field is to block after prev, which is our 0x1000 minus 8. 2000008. And it has to be the case that that doesn't break what we're doing. It's kind of an involuntary extra write that's going to happen here. And we just need to make sure that that part of memory doesn't matter. If this is like overwriting a vtable pointer, that's probably just another part of the object and it won't matter. But if we were like trying to if we were trying to set next to like a pointer to code, probably that would crash because it wouldn't be writable memory. This would be a problem for this technique. Yeah?
So the increasing addresses are going downwards, right?
Yes, in this diagram, the increasing addresses are going downwards.
So when we add the minus 8, is it accounting for that size plus free space?
When you add the minus 8, is it accounting for that size plus free space? Yes, because when we access the next field, we're going to add 8 to the pointer.
Oh, so that's why we're subtracting 8.
Yeah, so we're subtracting 8 because we're preparing for the code that the C code, as it's compiled, adding 8.
Okay,
got it. Can I answer your question? Okay, other questions? Okay, so that's that issue. So one other thing I'll try to mention pretty briefly is about double freeze. And I'm going to be brief about this because this is mostly mitigated by modern mallocs, but it's another case where we have a vulnerability. And this is kind of interesting because this seems like something where I'm freeing something twice. What's the worst that could happen? Like, but it turns out this is historically was exploitable. These days it's not exploitable, but it's not exploitable because there's explicit checks by looking at that size and free data to try to avoid double freeze and cause them to consistently crash. If you don't do that, then kind of a common strategy is that freeing something will add it to the head of a list, a linked list of free items. Why the head? Well, if you've written linked list manipulation code, it's much easier to add it to either the head or the tail than it is somewhere in the middle of the list. So probably that's what you're going to do. And if we do that again, well, we're going to add to the head of the list. So how do we do that? Well, we're going to adjust the list head to point to the thing we're freeing, and we're going to set its next pointer to point where the list head was. So if we do that again, we end up with this structure, where we have a cycle in our linked list. And what makes this useful to an attacker is that when we allocate something, it returns something that will still be on the list. Because how do we allocate? Well, we're going to look at the first thing on our list, see if it's big enough for the allocation. And if so, we'll just remove it from the list, adjust the list head to point to its next pointer, which is itself, which we're not going to notice, because why would you ever check for that? And now there's a loop in the list. And so that means that we can have two objects that work. And a way we can manipulate this is that we can, when we get our copy here, we can write to, we have our P here, points here, and if we can write to that, we can overwrite the next pointer and change what malloc returns next. And that will let us write anything anywhere pretty trivially if we have code that looks like this. So questions on this double free? Yeah. So we can, to give an example of kind of exploiting this, so let's say I have two frees, delete, write to that, you know, and two alloc, and, oh, this is the use of malloc, too. And then two mallocs. So we first, have the program just faultily do the double free, which is a relatively common bug. I don't know if you've encountered it, but relatively common when you have multiple pointers to things, you might free them twice. And then we have our loop in the free list. We free the first item, and then we have a pointer overwrite here, and I can, for example, make my pointer point to the free functions, global offset table entry. Why that? Because we know that's going to be called soon. That's the only reason I chose it. And then the next malloc will return the free entry pointer to the heap. That's really a pointer to the global offset table. And we can just write that, overwrite it to point wherever we want. And when that allocated memory is freed, it will actually run whatever code we pointed this global offset table to. Some questions about this kind of example use of this double free bug? Yeah, so this hasn't been possible for a while because usually what malloc and free implementations do is that where they're storing that size data, they just like have a bit that says, is this free memory or not? And they make sure that bit isn't set as it would have been set by a call to free. When you call free to cache double frees explicitly, and yeah, this adds some overhead. Like, it's not a free check, but it's pretty cheap. And also, kind of maybe more importantly, it catches a lot of programmer errors, because this is a pretty common type of just bug that's not a security bug, just my program crashes sometimes bug. And you can see why it's a really non-intuitive crashing bug, because when malloc returns the same thing multiple times, most programs behave very poorly. So this is mostly not possible. This but this used to be a major sort of source of memory exploits. And also, it kind of gets to something which is similar to some exploits we've seen, which is going to be kind of a big topic we have, is use after free, which has kind of a very similar flavor, where we somehow get two memory allocations that point to the same place. It's typically where we're going to have problems with use after free. And use after free, unlike double free, is not easy to mitigate. It's not easy to detect in a way that is not expensive. And to kind of give a simple example here, let's say I have some C++ code. I have two objects here. I create a foo object. I delete a foo object, then I create a bar object, and I call a method on the foo object. And if this is a method that might use polymorphism, we're going to use a vtable for this call. But it's rather likely, if foo and bar are of similar sizes, that the memory that foo used to occupy is now occupied by the bar object, which means that we probably overwrote foo's vtable pointer to point to bar's vtable, if bar has one, or to point to some data from bar. And so this is an exploitable situation, and the way we would exploit it is typically by triggering the something else object to modify our foo object in a way we normally wouldn't be able to modify the foo object. Could also work the other way, that if there's some way the foo object can modify the bar object in a way that's not supposed to, that could also cause problems. So we're going to rely on this type confusion to manipulate things that we aren't supposed to have valid operations for. Basically, what way we can think about it is that we're kind of thinking about how are the operations we do on bar going to be interpreted as operations on foo and vice versa. And that's going to be our library of things the attacker can do. And exactly what the options are going to depend on the specific foo and bar objects we've managed to get located in the same memory. But one of the simplest things that can happen is that if this is other data, and we can set what that data is, we've set the vtable pointer. We can set the vtable pointer to point to something which has its, it has a slot for the something method. And we could possibly make that point to something that's useful for us. That'd be one example of kind of basic slate. But it's going to be very context dependent. Now, something which might seem contrived here is like, well, why the heck would I write code where I allocate a foo object, then delete it, and then use it? Like, surely that doesn't happen. And the answer is, well, it does. So this is a chart from a 2023 paper. They looked at a whole bunch of use after free bugs in major open source software. And they found some examples of kind of use after free bugs which were triggered immediately. It wasn't quite that simple, but usually there was a second copy of the pointer saved somewhere that was immediately used. And you might say, why would these happen? As well, because typically, when you're running, freeing an object doesn't change things to make it not work anymore. Right? The memory is still mostly the same. So a lot of the stuff you do with that freed object still works unless you can manage to trigger an allocation to replace it very quickly. But more commonly, we'll have kind of cases where the use after free comes because we have two pointers to a value, one of which the programmer forgot about somehow. So like we'll have an object that's referenced from the nodes of a web page at the same time as referenced as a variable in JavaScript, and the web browser will erroneously free the object when the web page node goes away, not realizing it could be referenced by the running JavaScript code. Or another example is in multi-threaded code. It's pretty common that we'll free an object in one piece of code without thinking carefully enough about whether another object could still have another thread could still be manipulating a pointer to it. And this would trigger a use after free scenario. Another common thing is we'll talk probably Friday, next week probably, about a common strategy to manage allocations is to keep a reference count. So sort of counting how many pointers there are to it. If we make a bookkeeping error there where we forget to count the pointers correctly, this can result in a use after free, and often those bookkeeping errors will be very subtle. We forgot to increment at some point, but usually it doesn't matter. Instead, I have this diagram from a paper about, you know, where they just looked at a whole bunch of use after free bugs. They looked at 150 of them and tried to identify sort of what was going on in the code. So they have people where, like, there was an object moved somewhere and they freed it, but it wasn't really, you know, they had two pointers kind of in local variables, basically. They had some flag indicating things was deleted that wasn't updated correctly or wasn't checked correctly. So there was like some attempt to deal with, oh, this could be deleted, but it wasn't always, you know, verify that, oh, this is free. They had some examples where people didn't understand some interface where they used realloc incorrectly. Or something like realloc incorrectly. So notably, you have to use the return value of realloc because it could move your memory. And if you don't do that, that might be a use after free bug because you'll use the free memory because it was free to make it bigger to allocate new space. And they have a whole bunch of reference counting errors. That were potential causes. The other thing worth pointing out, you know, about like why does this really happen a bunch of the time is that there's often some distance here. So this is a table where they're measuring the line of free to the line of dereference distance. So how far apart was the code that freed the object from the code that used the object? And sometimes it is right next to each other, but there are a lot of bugs where it's like over 200 lines away. So this is something that's more likely to happen in big software projects. And you can understand why, if it's 200 lines away, people might not have realized that this was happening. And they also like figured out whether these bugs were in the same or different basic blocks. So basic block basically means a piece of code with no ifs or jumps or loops. And in a bunch of cases, it was in that or close to when it was close by, and sometimes it was far away. And so, we talk about heap use after free, if we talk about exploiting it, you know, we want to talk about not just like, are we using an object after it's freed, but can we get some other object to map to that same memory so we can manipulate it? And this is often pretty easy because the simplest way, the most efficient way to write the type of free in malloc that like have a list of free objects is that free adds something to the beginning of the list and malloc looks there to try to allocate memory. And that means this is actually very predictable. If you want to have take advantage of this, it frees something and then allocates it, you just need to figure out a way of making sure something you control is allocated as soon as possible afterwards. And if we're thinking of like a vulnerable web browser, we're going to write JavaScript code that causes the freed object to still be around, you know, have an erroneous pointer to it, and then immediately run something that triggers and something to be allocated. So it's true, however, that we usually don't have precise control because allocators do funny things for performances. Kind of the big intuition is that like you want to allocate something of the same size if possible, because they'll usually look for something of the same size. Often they'll have different lists for different sizes. And you want to kind of avoid some situations, like if you free up a big amount of space, that might make space for a whole bunch of later allocations, rather than it being in the little object you just freed. That you just freed that still has a pointer that will be used after freed. But something we can do, and something people do kind of practically when doing this, is something sometimes known as heap feng shui or heap grooming, where you just say, I want to make the allocator behave predictably. And something you'll try to do for that is make, maybe allocate a whole bunch of small objects to try to fill up all the little holes in the memory. So we're starting from a new, fresh region of memory and only have a small number of allocations that are affecting the order. So you can make things more consistent this way. And this is often something that's like pretty easy to do, especially if we're thinking of like browser exploits where I can just write a loop in JavaScript that allocates a bunch of objects of specific sizes to make it likely that the allocator is now in a new region of memory where we're just allocating the first thing, the second thing, the third thing, the fourth thing. We're not skipping around because we filled all the holes we might have to allocate in weird places. And another thing we can try to do, like if we want to like make things consistent, is often a strategy might be is after we filled in all these holes, we allocate object A, object B, object C, and we free object B, and now if that matches the size of something new that's allocated, we know exactly where it's going to go, most likely. And nothing else will fit there, so if there's bigger allocations, they won't fit there. We can kind of make it be at a predictable location, you know, and therefore kind of limit the amount of variation we have to deal with. Because otherwise it might seem kind of weird to So it might seem okay to say, yeah, you can test this in a debugger and see what happens, but can you really use that to exploit like a browser where you have no idea what was going on before your exploit code runs? Turns out, yes. And there are techniques like this that make this relatively consistent, even though it might seem like who knows what the allocator is going to do. And just combined with the fact that, well, even if you don't have that, usually the most recent allocations are the ones that matter. And I think use after free is really powerful because we can like basically do kind of all the things we want to do in an exploit using a use after free bug. So we have an information leak with a use after free bug. We want to deal with ASLR, for example. Well, if we have a pointer in one freed object and an integer or string in another in the same place, that gives us the value of a pointer. There's an information leak. Also, if we have a pointer in one object and some integers or strings we can manipulate in the other, that lets us change that pointer. And if that one object uses that pointer to read or write stuff, that gives us an arbitrary memory read or write. So very often, we have a read or write memory at some location gadget. If we have something like a VTable pointer in one of the freed objects, and we can manipulate it by changing numbers in the other, that gives us arbitrary code execution. We can point that VTable to a pointer to whatever code we want to run. So this one vulnerability just gives us, if we find kind of the right coincidences, you know, the right other type to be allocated in the same space that the freed object is, we can do kind of all the steps of our exploit, including our exploits where we need to defeat things like ASLR. And we might need to like read some memory from the program to figure out what's going on. We can do all of those steps using this one tool. And a pattern you might see in some of these exploits is that they'll find one use after free bug, and they'll just run it repeatedly using different of these strategies to like compose a full exploit. So to make this more concrete, so our information leak. So let's say I have, here I have a part struct where I have a date and a number of items. And I have a string where I have a buffer and a size. If we have a use after free with this current struct, I can read a memory address by asking, hey, my shopping cart, when is it from? How many items does it have? I can get these bogus values that are gonna look really weird, but they aren't just random numbers, they're the pointer. And they're going to tell me exactly where the buffer is allocated, you know, which I'm probably not supposed to know because of address space layout randomization. Questions? And also, if I can set my date and item count, I can change where the buffer points. So I can do this in reverse. I can say, yeah, that string, I'm going to set a date where it happens that now that string points to some more useful location in memory, and then I'm going to update the string. Thank you for updating my string. You updated that place in memory. And do that. And I can also use this trick to read memory. I change my date, and now I'm reading a part of memory near the buffer. So it manipulated the lower bits of the buffer's address, and it can figure out what's around it. So this is, you know, our tool, and we can use it. Let's do a little exercise. So let's say I have a browser tab object and a video object that I managed to get in the same place. Oh, I'm out of time, okay. So we'll continue this next time. And I'm going to sort of, next time I'll do some of these exercises and then we'll look at an example from a 2012 Google Chrome exploit. To give an example of a real, you know, use after free and what, you know, steps they did.